Good evening. We have had so many requests for a ghost story, I guess I'll have to tell one tonight. Folks still want to hear about the two ladies on Cape Cod who saw the ghost of the dripping sailor, made famous by Alexander Wilkett. Others write, what's new at the ocean-born Mary House? But the majority asked for the story of the barefoot boy, the most beautiful ghost story and the most unusual one I have ever come across. I had barely finished telling about the vision that Mr. Linus Shaw had of the steamer Portland in collision with a schooner when Mr. Wilford Robinson telephoned to say that he had an unusual tale to tell. I said, what kind of a story? Why, he said, I guess you'd call it a ghost story. Well, we've investigated a lot of so-called ghost stories, but this was the first one that we could really get our teeth into. I mean, the first one with facts which could be checked. You know, names and dates and places and so forth. We went to see Mr. Robinson, and when we were comfortably seated with pipe and notebook handy, he looked up and said, you may not believe what I'm going to tell you, but every word of it's true. When Alice began taking notes, he raised one eyebrow and he said, shorthand? Yes, I said, we're taking this down verbatim. We have to with a story of this kind. Mr. Robinson began by telling us that he was born in New Hampshire, lived on a farm as a boy, always wanted to become a doctor, but wound up by becoming a sales manager. Sometime around 1905 or 6, he was stricken with malaria, and as soon as he was able, he took his wife and his 9-year-old daughter, Edie, and went to Hampton, New Hampshire, to spend a few weeks with his father and mother. Aside from Mr. Horace Lane, who was the town clerk and lived nearby, Robinson didn't know a soul. He got up around noon, read the paper, had another little rest, and then took a short walk for exercise. He liked Hampton very much. It was clean, quiet, and cool, with wide streets, white houses and red barns, and lilacs and elm trees. One afternoon, Mrs. Robinson said, after the supper dishes are done, Will, I wish you'd take Edie and me up to that place you're always talking about. You know the bridge where the trains go under. They had an early supper and left the house before sunset, taking the road which leads from the depot to Northampton. They stood on the railroad bridge to watch a freight train go by, then crossed over and came back on the opposite side of the road. It wasn't the big, broad highway it is today, and no automobiles whizzed by at 40 miles an hour. They followed a path that crossed several private driveways leading to fine, old-fashioned houses. And as they walked along, Mrs. Robinson picked some clover and buttercups. It was the loveliest time of day to be out in the country, warm in the rays of the setting sun, yet cool from the breeze from the ocean. The little girl had on a cape which came to her ankles, and she walked ahead of her parents, exclaiming over the robins who were singing for rain in the apple trees. All at once, Mr. Robinson noticed that his daughter had stopped. Stop, stock still. And just beyond her, standing on the soft green grass, he saw a boy about 10 or 11 years old, barefoot, wearing faded blue overalls and a small white cap jauntily balanced on his head. As Mr. Robinson walked closer, he sensed, rather than saw, there was something unusual about the lad, and he tried to figure out what it was. I can see him today, Mr. Robinson told us, as plain as I saw him then. And I interrupted to ask, well, exactly what did you see and hear? How did he look? What was he doing? What did he say? He didn't say anything. He just stood there, kind of cocky-like, with his head thrust back, over on one side, and a cute, half-quizzical smile on his face. He had the reddest lips I ever saw on a boy, and his eyes fairly danced with mischief. What color eyes? Well, I don't know for sure. They were lively and dark, probably dark blue. What color was his hair? Oh, his hair was dark brown, and it curled onto his forehead from under his sailor's cap. As I said, Mr. Robinson went on, he just stood there, hands jammed into his overalls pocket, bare brown feet planted far apart, head tilted to one side, and that roguish smile. If he'd had a tattered straw hat, he would indeed have been Whittier's barefoot boy. When the Robinsons caught up with Edie, who hadn't moved or spoken, Mr. Robinson said, hello, sonny. This where you live? And at the sound of Mr. Robinson's voice, that barefoot boy vanished. He didn't run away or jump and hide. He just melted into thin air, leaving Wilford Robinson and his wife the most surprised couple in Hampton, New Hampshire. Edie, the little girl, just stood there instead. As soon as Robinson got his breath, he went forward and examined the grass. But there were no footprints, nothing to show that a 10-year-old boy had been standing there. On the way back, Edie hung onto her mother's hand, and turning around to her father, she asked, where did he go, Daddy? He was a nice little boy. And her father said, I don't know, Edie, where he went, or where he came from. but I intend to find out. After Edie had a glass of milk and a molasses cookie and had gone to bed, Mr. and Mrs. Robinson sat in front of the fire, trying to make sense out of what they'd seen. Robinson told us I'd read about such things, of course, but this was the first time we had ever seen a real ghost. The next night after supper, Robinson went back to the same spot alone. Not a leaf stood on the trees. Not a sound save the soft clucking of an old mother hen tucking her chickens under her wing for the night. Across the fields, he heard the tinkle of a cowbell. And as the round red sun sank low in the west, its slanting rays touched an old weather vane on a nearby barn, turning it to pure gold. At that time, there was a stone wall on one side of the road, and Mr. Robinson sat down, lighted his pipe, and waited. Twilight came quickly, and as the shadows deepened, it got cool and quite damp, and off in the meadow, long ribbons of blue-white mist rose in the gathering dusk above the cattails and blue flags. The peepers were making a great racket when Mr. Robinson got up and walked to the place where they'd seen the little boy. Stepping under the trees, he said softly, "Barefoot boy with cheek of tan, are you there, my little man?" The leaves rustled, and off in the woods a whippoorwill called, but that was all. There was no bright-eyed, smiling, barefoot sailor boy. And disappointed, Robinson went back to his father's house. As he turned to go in the yard, he saw the glow of his neighbor's cigar, and he said, "Nice weather we're having, Mr. Lane. How's everything down at town hall?" And Mr. Lane said, "Oh, is that you? Come in and have a game of cribbage. I'll put on another stick of wood. Gets kind of chilly after sun goes down." Mr. Robinson didn't play a very good game of cards that night. He couldn't seem to keep his mind on it. And noticing this, Lane said, "What's the matter, Wilfred? You look worried." Well, not worried, just puzzled. And then he said, "Horace, I want to tell you something. Don't say a word until I've finished. I won't blame you if you don't think I'm telling the truth and making this up, but I swear every word is true." And he told him what had happened. The town clerk brought his fist down on the table with a bang. "Well, by Godfrey, so you've seen him too." "Well, by Godfrey, do you know him?" "Why, of course I do. That's the Marston boy. Died several years ago from blood poisoning. He and some boys were playing with an old gun up in the woods. It exploded and took off his hand. 'Twasn't properly tended to, and the poor little fellow died a day or so after. Of course I know him. Well, by Godfrey." A few days later, Mr. Robinson walked up to the farmhouse again, and this time he saw a man leaning on a fence post. Robinson made some remark about the weather, and then he asked if he liked living in that part of the town. The man hesitated and said, "Well, we do now, but the women folks didn't like it at first." "What do you mean, at first?" "Well, I don't know as I can explain it exactly."
"You mean about the little boy?"
"Well, yes. How'd you know about him? Have you seen him?" And so they compared notes about the ghost of the barefoot boy. "We didn't know what to think," the farmer said, "the first time that fella appeared to us. It shook us up so. We didn't dare tell anybody. Then after he'd appeared several times, always just as you saw him, feet spread apart, hands in his pockets, and that mop of hair on his forehead, well, you know, we sort of adopted him, if you can understand what I mean." Mr. Robinson nodded and waited while the farmer went on. "Last time we saw him was out in the garden. We hoped he'd come in the house, but he never did. Let me tell you what happened one day. My wife was coming downstairs with an armful of blankets she was going to hang out on the clothesline. And there, smack in the open door, with sunlight all around him, was that beautiful boy. And in one hand, he was holding some purple violets. My wife spoke to him kind of sudden-like, and he just melted away and was gone." Now, that's the end of our notes for Mr. Robinson. It was such a remarkable story, I wanted to see the locale, and at the same time, I wanted to check up on a few details. To tell the truth, I didn't expect to find very much when we set out for Hampton. First, we went to the town hall, the old one that burned down some time ago. And to town clerk William Brown, I said, "I'm looking for information about a boy named Marston. He died sometime before 1906. I realized I was not very definite, but Mr. Brown was pleasant and courteous and accommodating. He brought out some big dusty ledgers and patiently went through them. "Nothing here," he said. "Wait a minute, it may be in this other book." He thumbs through that for a while and said, I guess this is what you want. "Marston, Valentine H., died October 12th, 1890. I asked if any of his family still lived in Hampton, Well, sure, he said his brother, Chester Marston, has been a barber here for years. Anybody will show you where his shop is up in the square. As I left, I inquired, what about Mr. Horace Lane? Did you know him? Oh, yes, Mr. Lane was the town clerk of Hampton. It was just 12 o'clock when we reached Mr. Marston's barbershop, and he was in a hurry to get home to dinner. I told him briefly what Mr. Robinson had told us and waited to see what he would say. He said soberly, come up to the house and I'll show you Val's picture. As we rode along, Mr. Marston spoke feelingly about his brother. Val was 2 years older than I, he said. Born on February the 14th, so Mother named him Valentine. I was only 9 when he died, but I remember him perfectly. Wonderful lad. And mighty smart for his age. I still have a sailboat we used to play with. Mrs. Marston found the picture. An old-fashioned tintype taken when Val was quite young. But I could see the mischief in his dark eyes, and on his forehead there was a big curl of dark hair. Tell me, I said, do you remember how he looked when he walked or stood around? Mr. Marston smiled wistfully. Yes, of course I do. He used to stand with his hands in his pockets, kind of cocky-like, with his head tilted to one side. Great fisherman, Val was, for a kid. Used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go fishing with the men at Plum Island. You know, he had the most beautiful smile, even if he was my brother. I asked Mr. Marston if he'd ever met the man who had seen the spirit of little Valentine. Mr. Robinson? No, he said, no, I never heard of him. When we left, Mr. Marston directed us to the cemetery. And there on a tall gray monument, I found and photographed this inscription. Valentine Hugh Marston, born February the 14th, 1879, died October the 12th, 1890. So everything we'd been told seemed to check. I might add that Mr. Chester Marston has okayed this script and given me his permission to use it. I think it's the most beautiful ghost story I ever investigated. Next week, I'll have a snake story that has never been told before. I think the youngsters should like this one.